everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Civ Show podcast, where we suck so you don't have to. I'm your host, Moisos.
And early instead of being late this time is the Stagnus.
Wait, you were late? What?
Well, no, we're usually late, right?
Oh,
now we're like
yeah.
Actually purposely on time slash early.
That's true. But if you're listening to this, like, you know, later on, then we're just right on time. We're in, on demand in your ears.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot that people listen to it later on.
The majority of
hey,
people.
Hey, guys, this is a live show too, man. There's going to be some live things you guys don't get. Don't worry about it.
Special effects everywhere. We talk about what's on the screen. Like, there's Moe's Tavern. Zoe is missing again inside Moe's Tavern. Maybe we need to talk about him about this. He's been in there a few times. I don't know. Maybe we should be a little bit concerned.
Maybe. But I don't think it ever works with whoever goes to Moe's Tavern. No one gets away from Moe.
You're stuck in there forever. Speaking of being stuck in there, we were stuck in a religious battle last game. We were playing a religion-only game where religious victory was the only one that was enabled. War was not allowed, and we played with a mod that allowed everybody to get a religion. It was called Religions Experience. Banded. Now, I want to hear what your take, Nystagmus. I want to hear what your take on the game was and your take on the mod. But let's start with the game.
So I thought I had a lot of fun, really, to be honest. Like, we never religion is like kind of like a because in multiplayer, religion is just so difficult to do and pull off. Right. Like there's a reason why you put in the no war modifier in the game, probably because it makes it just so much more difficult if you're trying to go for that. Like the best way to go for religious victory is kind of more sneaky, but you can only really do it against the computer. If you're able to do it against a computer, a human player, they're probably not playing all that great. That's the other major problem there. So I know that we had that no war modifier, but just exploring other aspects of religion, how like the religious units actually work, because I screwed up the guru thing like a bunch of times. And so I just never used gurus to heal anybody. I didn't even know they could do that until that game, to be honest. So
nobody uses them because they're terrible usually in a regular game. Because like you could barely spread religion as it is, so you don't get into many theological combat situations. So gurus are just useless. But in this game, completely different. They're useful as heck.
Yeah, they're basically like supply convoys, right? Like,
yeah.
I screwed it up. Like I moved my guys out of the way and you could kill my guru like immediately. I'm just not used to that kind of combat. And so but a very interesting premise. Like it was like it was warfare by another means where you're not losing cities. Like you're not losing the actual physical cities. You're just losing them to the faith. Right. And yeah. So, yeah, a very interesting take on another aspect of the game that as a multiplayer Civ viewer would not see. Right. No one would ever go for a religious victory. It's one way to lose.
So gurus, they kind of, yeah, they act as that medic or supply convoy, but they're also a general. They also increase your adjacent units strength by 5. So they make your units even better. So it's like a general and a healer at the same time, which people don't.
Yeah.
People might not know that. And a lot of people don't know that gurus actually increase the combat strength of your apostles because nobody does religious combat. But now you know. So chat or listeners, now you know gurus are actually kind of overpowered. You just don't realize it, but they're pretty good.
I just don't like the whole debater thing. I don't like that. Like, I don't like that. That can just like pop up randomly. Like, one way I turned you around when you actually did some good strategy, and then I turned on easy mode by being Spain and having +5, and then I got like 3 apostles in a row that got debater. So I just chose debater for all of them, and then they're basically like invincible. Yeah. And then I was dumb still, and I deleted one of them by accident because I used too many of its spreads. But again, the debater's like this random promotion that you can get. It's not really all that clear how you get it. And then once you exploit it, so like once you get it and you can know that you can get it again because of like in that whole round or something like that, you can get it, then that's an exploit you can use too, which is kind of not
fair. Well, it's not, you can't really exploit it. So it's the way that Owls explained this to me on Wednesday was every turn, each player has like a different role of what apostle promotions that they get. So if you purchase 2 apostles on the same turn, both of those apostles will have the exact same 3 promotions available to them. So that's kind of how it works. So every turn, it's a roll of the dice of 3 promotions. So if you buy more than one apostle, they all get the same promotion. So if you happen to buy 5 apostles and you roll debater, all 5 of those apostles can get debater. So kind of the strategy to even out your empire's apostles is to maybe buy one every turn just to kind of keep rolling and rolling and get like different types of promotions. So you can get debater, you can get prosthetalizer, you can get The other thing that's really good, I don't know the name of off the top
Translator.
Of my head.
Translator's okay.
Translator, yeah, yeah. That's the triple in other cities and other civilizations. Yeah.
Yeah.
That one's good. That's good. That's the one I was thinking of. I couldn't remember the name. That's how the mechanic works anyway. But I would agree with you that, you know, Debater, it's you have to get it, especially in that game. You have to get it. It's the only way that you can kind of clear other apostles. And like, if you don't have it, you're just going to lose. But there's a way to defend against it, too.
Yeah, there is. And it's not like impossible, right? But there was one thing that would have broken that game like 100%. And that has to do with the mod, but not your game in particular. But like with Spain in the game, if I got that one, like that one belief that
plus
gave me like
five, plus five theological combat,
I would have been unstoppable. I would have just like romful stomped every single one of your apostles. And also, I would honestly, I played Spain stupidly. What I should have done was I just should have put inquisitors all in my own borders and just stay there. Right, with the inquisitors, and then build apostles only for the frontline combat so that I can build a bunch of like free inquisitors because they're really cheap and they're like super strong.
Yeah,
like in my own borders, they're like really strong for Spain. And so I should just had all those there because you attacked into them and like almost died.
Yeah, so I learned that actually inquisitors in their own land, if they defend, get that plus 35 bonus. So they can actually compete with apostles. So if they attack, they don't get that bonus. But if they defend in their own land, they get that bonus. I didn't know that actually before I was looking at like your empire. And I'm like, I don't think this is isolated to Spain. So then I kind of like built some apostles in my land and I noticed that you were dying to my apostles. I was like, oh, interesting. Okay. So you just get that plus five naturally. So maybe you get like the plus 35.
There's another special thing I have to just double check. There is something that happens with our,
you get an extra spread or, and you eliminate 100% of the religion in your land rather than 75%.
I think. That's what, again, I could just eliminate. That's what I can do. Yeah. So I could just immediately eliminate any converted city,
which is ridiculous, by the way. How do you, if Spain's in the game, you just, it's impossible to win a religious victory. You just need to buy one inquisitor and then it's like, boop. Oh, I'm good. Okay. We're fine. It's crazy.
Yeah. I did that to a couple of the cities that you converted. I just immediately had my inquisitor there and I just like, did it and got rid of it.
I do think that like 75% is too much. Like 100% honestly is too much still, but even 75% is too much. I think 50% would have been fine because I always felt like inquisitors like kind of ruined the game for religious victory because you buy one, it costs 50, right? Like it costs, you need to buy an apostle in order to get inquisitors and that could be costly, but it costs you 50 faith, like barely anything. And then you use it once and it completely eliminates the other person's religion, and they have to use multiple spreads, usually from an apostle with even translator, triple the strength in other civilizations. They're using that like crazy. It takes like two or three times to finally convert a city. Then one inquisitor comes in with one charge, bing, completely gone. And so I just balance it where it takes as many charges for the inquisitor as it does for like an apostle. That's kind of all I ask for.
I don't think there's a huge drive to balance that just because no one in multiplayer like really cares. Like because there's other more effective ways to get rid of religious units in multiplayer, which is declare war and basically kill them with the regular military units. And that's just kind of like a thing where I don't think there's even a drive to balance the inquisitors or the apostles or anything like that. It's just like a mechanic that I get it. You know why? Because the reason why the Inquisitor is like that, because if you're going up against the computer, like every single time I've done this and the computer goes for religious victory, they don't just like, you don't see like a trickle of apostles. Usually like 50 of them show up all at once, right? And so like a bunch of apostles show up. You need the Inquisitors to like stop them from spreading because the computer can also make moves faster than you can, right? And so as a human player against a computer player, even though the computer might not make the best decisions, but they can still do more actions in a turn than you can, right? And so they're able to just like show up and like spread everything all at once, right, in a turn. They're also very good at hiding their religious units behind the fog of war, right? So just behind like your thing, and then they just show up. Like I literally was playing a game and then all of a sudden I got converted within two turns.
Wow.
Because I just never expected them to do it, right? Now granted, I'm not a very good player. I wasn't paying attention to the religious game because again, it's the multiplayer that spoils me. When I'm playing my single player games, I just never assume anyone's going for religion, so I just never check. And I would have known that someone was spreading their religion the entire world. And there, I was the last one standing.
But okay, so moving on to the mod, I thought the mod was really good. We played it again on Wednesday for the D&D show, since we had a couple people missing, so we played Civ again, and it introduces a lot of gold to do with religion. It introduces a lot of science too. Like, they have the replicate of choral music, where your shrines and temples provide culture. They have that equivalent, but for science, which I think is really cool. They added, like, you can get +8 gold for every world wonder that you have. That, man, with China, for example, you'd get so much gold early on. You just stack up the gold. That'd be crazy.
Well, I found out, like, the gold thing, right? And my thing is, I just basically did all the trade, right? That's all I did. I thought, like, the mods were really cool. It's really stable, too, right? So, like, it doesn't really affect the game. Because you have to be careful with that. Sometimes the mod just gets really unstable and kicks you out of the game. And the names for all this stuff, like, it's just really well done, to be honest.
Are they accurate? Are they actual terms? I wouldn't know.
Yeah, they're actually terms. Yeah. I don't have any examples off the top of my head, but I do know that they're real, right? Okay. Like, they're not just like made up. A really cool, little mod that the person, whoever made it, adds another dimension to the game. Yeah. It can really make you focus heavily on one thing, or it can even make you well-rounded everywhere. Right. No, I really enjoyed the mod. I think we should look for more cool mods. I'm going to be doing that for my next game, if I ever do win a game again.
Yeah, I think I'm going to highlight, like, one mod every time. Just like, hey, let's try this mod today. Hey, let's try this. Just to increase the experience. Just one game at a time. And, you know, we're at a point now with Civ where there's nothing new anymore. So, like, we got to add and spice things up a little bit. So if we add a mod every session, it's like there's a new update every time we play, right? There's something new to learn. So, like, just kind of keep it fresh. I have a good one for this week. I'm gonna wait until the end. I saw it earlier today. maybe you saw it, but it was earlier today. Somebody linked it and I tagged Zoe in it. I didn't tag you because I know you're busy. So I was like, hey, Zoe, look at this. And he was like, oh my god. So he's excited for this one too. But even though he's not gonna be here on Sunday, and he's gonna be really upset because we're gonna do a really good mod. And we're also going to do a really good game, but we'll save that for a little bit later. Okay, how do you feel about religion in the game in general? Do you think it's underrated? Do people underrate religion in Civ?
I always felt like it became like a peripheral thing. Like, it's always been kind of peripheral to the game itself. No one really ever really focused on it other than just the beliefs to beef up their own Civ. Right.
Right.
No one ever actively tries to, like, spread the religion or anything like that in multiplayer, at least. It's just not feasible. So the mechanics are kind of limited in that. I do think, like, religion does add something to the game, though. Like, you know, there is something to be said about having religion tied to things like, you know, how much gold, science, or culture. Right. Because I'll give you an example for culture. Most of the works that we know of from, like, Michelangelo or Leonardo, they were all basically hired by the Catholic Church, right? To do most of the works that we know about from them. So a lot of these, like, places, like, or a lot of the world wonders are actually built for religious purposes, right? So number one would be the Hagia Sophia, which was the biggest dome in the world for, like, the longest time. It was built initially as a Orthodox Christian church. And now is a mosque in Istanbul.
Really? Wow. It's a complete opposite religion, not opposite, but, like, completely different religion building now. That's kind of interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it is a mosque now. So it's not a Christian church anymore. Yeah, so when the Ottomans took over Constantinople and renamed it Istanbul and made it the capital of the Ottoman Empire, the Hagia Sophia became a mosque.
I guess that makes a lot of sense. So, yeah. Okay.
a lot of these, like, things that they are basically inspired, or not necessarily inspired, but contracted by the religion itself. So in the Catholic Church's viewpoint, they were separate from rulers. So the Catholic Church, like the Pope, basically commissioned a lot of works to be done, like these cathedrals and St. Peter's Basilica, things like that, which I always thought would be a cool wonder if they made St. Peter's Basilica.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah, I don't know why I think it's a mod. I think it's in a mod.
Right. But that's one. And then you have other places where the religion was fused with the ruling, right? So, like, the main difference between Catholicism in Europe and, say, Islam in Arabia and North Africa was that the rulers were basically also the major religious leaders as well. Like that role was a lot of times fused together, whereas the Pope was someone that was separate from like the king of whatever country you were, or whatever kingdom you were part of. And so how the works were commissioned actually changed in that as well, because in cases like the Ottomans, right, since, and there was at the time, I made it a little bit too simplistic, but that's basically like the underlying current that did change from time to time, depending on which empires were in power, because whoever controlled, say, Jerusalem, Constantinople, Istanbul, and Medina would be kind of like the seat of Islam, of the Islamic faith, right? And so basically a lot of the times the empire or the government commissioned works for religious purposes.
Huh. So wait, I want to go back to the point where you said like the religious leader was like the leader of not the country, but like that's where it kind of confuses me. So if let's say, for example, France has their king, right? King Louis, for example, I think he was mm-hmm. the king of France. And then you have
there are a lot of the King Louis,
right? That's why I said King Louis. And then you have, let's say, the Pope in charge, and France is Catholic. Back in the day, was the Pope kind of in charge of the people in the country, or was the king in charge of the people in the country?
It was a divided power, so it wasn't like the Pope told someone what to do, but the popes did at times wield religious influence over rulers and have actually tried to excommunicate them in some cases.
Is that how, right? The Crusades went?
No, that's something different, right? So, but the Crusades were basically a call from the Eastern Orthodox Christians from the Catholics for help, right? Because they had trouble fighting the Muslim armies in modern day Turkey and the Holy Land. And so they used the Holy Land as like a carrot for the Catholics to get involved. You can take over the Holy Land if you come over and help us fight them. And so, but what I meant by the Pope and stuff like that is that the power was divided, meaning whoever was king, and it's symbolic too, who puts the crown on the king, usually the Pope. In England, it's the Archbishop of Canterbury. So even in England, who isn't Catholic, the religious leader is the one who grants the power to the king. And so that those roles were divided. Now, the other big thing, though, is that they would fight with each other, which caused a lot of discord, right? So, for example, there were times when the Pope tried to excommunicate like a ruler, and then all the ruler did was move over, take over Vatican, get rid of the Pope, and just put a new Pope in. And so that's happened as well. And so because those roles have been divided in Catholic Europe at the time, they actually fought with each other a lot, right? Like, or they butted heads. Whereas in the Eastern Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, the emperor was seen as the leader of the religion, who it was the emperor's role to choose the major religious figures. So he had final say, right? He or she, because a lot of times it was also a woman who was the leader. And so they would actually just replace the patriarch of the Eastern Orthodox Christian faith just on a whim if they wanted to. And that was a power that the emperor had, right? Whereas no king in Europe had the power to get rid of the Pope.
Okay. Right? Yeah. Wow.
Like legally, at least. Right. So that's like the way that the religions were divided power, again, power wise is interesting as well.
Okay. A little off topic, but I know this is something that you like. No. Like what I'm about to ask you is a little off topic, but I know that you're passionate about this. So can you explain to me why, what's his name? Not Bismarck. The guy, Frederick Barbarossa. Was in charge of neither Holy Roman or an empire, but they call him the Holy Roman Empire or Emperor. Like, what's up with that?
Well, because so after the fall of Rome, right, and the Roman Empire is like very symbolic even to this day, right? Like, people will use symbolism from the Roman Empire to like legitimize their power or their ideology, right? Mm-hmm. So after the fall of the Western Roman Empire, the title of Augustus, which is the emperor of Rome, still technically existed. What happened was when the, I think it was the Ostrogoths that took over Rome in 476, they just said to the Eastern Roman Empire that there's no need for a new Augustus, right? We don't need that title. But sometimes when new rulers would show up, they would use that title to legitimize their claim.
Okay.
Right? Saying, I'm the new heir to this area because that's what the Roman... So the... And my direct history of the Roman Holy Roman Empire is a little bit fuzzy, so I'm not going to like say too much definitively.
Okay.
But it wasn't... It's a name that's loaded because you're thinking it's like one huge political entity when it really wasn't. The Holy Roman Emperor had very loose control over the region that they were talking about, right? There was a lot of principalities with local rulers who held a lot of sway, right? It was basically trying to use the name of the Roman Empire to legitimize like the Holy Roman Emperor's title.
Oh, yeah, right? Okay, I understand.
And they can use that to gain influence, but Europe was still feudal, right? At the time of the Holy Roman Empire, they still serve under a feudal system, which means, technically speaking, in a feudal system, the king is just the first of many, meaning there's a lot of lords who own a lot of land, and they all just pay homage to the king, but the king doesn't have direct control over their land.
Yeah.
Right? That got more centralized as time went on, but in feudal Europe, the power structure was very decentralized. That's why kings could be like deposed, right? Because if more than half the lords all got together, they could just wage war with the rest of the lords and the king and just replace them.
And I guess that's kind of what happened in Game of Thrones, huh? So like that whole
Game of Thrones is exactly struggle. Like an example of like, yeah, how power struggles occur in kingdoms that are under a feudal system.
Interesting. Okay.
Because right? It just matters, you know, it's the epitomization of might makes right, meaning you can be the king, but if all the lords get together and say you're no longer the king anymore, then they just take over and crown someone else as king.
Right? So, and to be clear, so there was the Holy Roman Empire was neither holy or Roman or an empire.
No, not in the way that people would see those words being used, right? That's what I mean, right? Yeah. So.
Okay, well, thank you for the history lesson. I appreciate that. We always appreciate your history lessons here on the Civ Show, so thank you very much.
And of course, if anything I got wrong, people can point it out to me. I do... from time to time get some of the details messed up because and that's the reason why in history a lot of times people will get very into the details, and so that's why I try to talk more broadly because I don't want to mess up the details.
Okay,
without the details.
Yeah, you're also like basing this off of memory. You don't have really anything in front of you, so like I don't think people can fault you too much for that. You're doing the best you can. That's all we can ask for.
Just use it as a disclaimer. I'm cool with constructive criticism, and if I got something wrong, point it out. I'm not going to get all defensive or anything like that.
Okay, do you want to talk about next game? I got a good one for you.
I am on the tip of my, on the edge of my seat right now to find out what kind of game we're going to be playing next week.
Okay, this is what I've been wanting to play for so long. I've been wanting to play the religious one too. Like that one's longer than this one, but this one is also one I've been waiting a long time to do. And I think it's unfortunate that Zoe's not going to be here because I think he'd really enjoy it, but maybe we can do it again. We're going to be playing.
Nothing says we can't do it again. You guys took my polluting game again, so whatever.
It's true. We're going to be playing. This one's going to be called Babylon 5 or Babylon 3, I guess. And we're all going to be playing Babylon. And we are going to be playing where if you have the most technologies at the end of the game, you are declared the winner. So it's not necessarily the most science per turn. It's the most technologies researched at the end of the game. If by any chance the technologies are tied, then we will go to the science per turn metric. There you go.
Yeah, sounds pretty straightforward.
Do you know your Eurekas though? Do you know how to reach? Do you know how to get them?
I think we all know the answer to that question. So.
Okay. Do your research, you know, during the game, you always have a goal. Basically, the strategy for this one is only be researching, hard researching something that you know you will not get a Eureka for. So the first three, for example, pottery, animal husbandry, and mining, you can't get a Eureka for any of those. Those three need to be hard researched. I'd recommend researching those three first while you get all these ancient and classical era Eurekas. After that, if you still don't have like fishing, if you never settled the city on the coast, maybe you can research that as you still keep doing like the Eurekas. So that's the general strategy. Don't research unless you have to. If you know you're going to research, don't go for the Eureka. Go for something else. There you go. And then we're going to be having Van Bradley again on the show on Sunday. It's Van Bradley and whoever else is available all month long. And guess who else is available? Absolutely no one. So it's going to be Van Bradley, Nystagmus, and myself on Sunday playing the Babylon 3 game.
And just two things to add, you got to just know that turn into that one because you'll have me and Van Bradley probably have an actual productive conversation about the merits of the new Star Wars series sequels. You know, a productive conversation. No one getting upset about purple hair or anything like that. And then the last thing I wanted to ask was, you mentioned we're going to do another mod. You didn't mention that
right
in your game.
Right.
What is the mod?
Okay. So it might not like directly apply to this game, but I want to try it out anyway. So it's called Black Market. And the premise of it is that once you get to a certain technology, you unlock the black market and it unlocks city projects where you can buy or sell strategic resources for money. So you can sell it for a little bit of money. So like you're basically selling it for cheap, but you have to buy it for a really high price. So if you don't get, for example, coal in your land, there is now access to it by going to the black market. It's going to cost you a pretty penny. But now maybe okay, you can prioritize the gold.
I like there. That. I think that should be like in the actual next Civilization game.
Right? Yeah.
Actually should be doing that. Because I remember there was another game, a real-time strategy game called Rise of Nations. I don't know if anyone's ever played that.
I've heard of it.
But you can do the same thing. Like if you have all this gold, you can actually just buy. And as you're buying it, it changes the price of it on this market, on this like fake stock market.
Yeah.
And you can actually like plummet the price. So like if you're an ally, what you could do is you can sell like wood, for example, plummet the price and then someone else can buy it.
Yeah.
Like super reduced prices.
So that's like the whole premise of Offworld Trading Company, if you've ever played that. So Soren Johnson, the ex-Civ 4 designer, he went to another company and then made Offworld Trading Company. And that's exactly the premise, is that like you just buy and sell resources to build like a little empire. And the goal is to make the most money and to buy out other companies. So they have stock prices based off of how much they're selling and how much they're worth and how much money they have. So you like buy stocks from other people. Then you make sure that your stocks are worth high. You buy low resources. So if there's a lot of water on the land, everybody's selling water. Don't make water. Just buy the water and then make something else with the water. So like it's interesting. It's a very interesting game. And I don't think it is that detailed, this mod. I don't think there's a price shift in these things, but it's a way where I know that a lot of people have, oh, I didn't spawn with niter. Oh, I didn't get any niter. Oh, there's no aluminum in my land. There's only one piece of this solves that problem. And that's exactly why I love the mod. That's exactly why I want to give it a try, because maybe it's something that we use later on regularly, just like this Religions Expanded mod. It might be a regular thing. Maybe we ban certain beliefs, but the fact that everyone can get a religion, I think, is really appealing. Some of the new beliefs, I think, are really, really interesting and not overpowered. But we'll see. We'll see. We're just going to try out these new things. So if you win, which you might, you better have a mod ready. And it better not be Warhammer again. You know the Dark Elves.
I call it Dark Elves.
No.
Can't wait for the game now. Game very excited. I'm going to lose probably, but don't worry about that.
If you're listening and you want to support us, be sure to check out our Patreon page. For a little as $4 a month, you can be a settler tier and give us a little bit of change so that we can upgrade our quality of work over here. You can even go up to $50 a month if you so choose, and you can get a custom postcard each and every single month if you do that at the $50 per month level. You can also check out our YouTube, our Twitch. We are live on Twitch right now, in case you don't know, at twitch.tv/TheCivShow. And you can check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts. Also Twitter and Instagram. Nailed it all.
Awesome. All
right. Have a good night, everybody. Peace out.
Have a good one.